have to get to those girls.
What? Kimmy, your wedding is in 3 days.
This is a pickle. How do we choose?
Maybe you can help us.
That's it. Titus, you're a genius.
I know.
I mean, he's not wrong. Hello, beautiful people, it's Court Killers!
Welcome to Court Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Brian Brushwood, and I'm feeling very confused. I love more Kimmy Schmidt in the world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I am scared of interactive specials of any variety. Mm.
And scared of choice.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Because either the choice is a fake choice and clearly designed to go one way or the other, or it's a real choice, which is equally terrifying because the audience rarely makes the right choice. What about you, Allison Sheridan? Are you a fan of the idea of interactive movies like this?
Well, that does sound fun. I'm afraid of the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt because we were visiting our friend Gene. Steve accidentally dropped an air conditioner out of the window. And then that night was the first time I saw the show where an air conditioner falls out of a window. So I don't want that to be interactive, really.
I had not considered that you might have already experienced Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt as an interactive experience. So, yeah, right? That kind of changes everything. I'm neither afraid of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, nor am I excited.
You're Schrodinger's Tom. Bryce, tell us a little bit about this Netflix original.
Yeah, so that's The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Kimmy versus the Reverend, an interactive special where Kimmy must decide between marrying her new fiancé, which I think is Elijah Wood, and saving innocent lives. That's coming to Netflix with interactive support on May 12th. So you got to make sure your device supports it.
And we all, of course, agree, choose love over saving lives.
I don't know. Wait, aren't they the same? All right, primary target. Do the primary target.
Yeah, before we get into a COVID-19 analogy. Netflix added 15.77 million subscribers in Q1, well past estimates. And that, of course, has a lot to do with the fact that in the end of the first quarter, a lot of people suddenly had to stay home. Netflix reported a total of 182.9 million subscribers. That's up 22.8% year over year. Netflix has been kind of flattening out, certainly in the United States. So this has certainly juiced the numbers there. Netflix said it could not accurately predict future subscriber growth, though, because of the pandemic. It expects a spike coming this quarter as more people are still in lockdown, but a slowdown in growth as people come out of lockdown and not only have less time to watch Netflix, but also may not have a job and may not be able to afford to keep Netflix as a subscription. Netflix also said its Q3 releases are on track since filming had been completed. Future gaps from the current pause in production will be made up with licensed content, and some filming has already resumed for Netflix, including in Iceland and South Korea, which will serve as models for resumption in other regions. Netflix said its most viewed content in Q1 was the Spencer for Hire movie, Spencer Confidential, with 85 million households watching at least 2 minutes of it. Netflix also revised its negative cash flow down from $2 billion this year to $1 billion and said it will raise that $1 billion through a debt offering. So their cash flow is improving. Subscriptions are up. They're a little nervous about what's going to happen to the economy once everybody goes back to work. And Netflix has added a screen lock feature to its Android mobile app.
Man, all I want to see in the world is cut to some video of a Netflix CFO who is wearing a blazer that looks an awful lot like a lab coat. And he's pointing to this graph. He says, now you notice here our upward trajectory has been very consistent, but now we're seeing this big spike. And we're afraid that after the spike, it's going to come back down. So we want to flatten that curve by having as many of you guys continue to subscribe to Netflix as much as possible. How weird to be the beneficiary of the fact that everybody has to shelter in place. And yes, the obligatory dancing on Quibi's grave. Let me just get that out of the way. What's Quibi watching?
You'll have another opportunity later if you want.
Okay,
I'll
save
now.
It for later. But do you think that we're going to see a big drop off next quarter? I mean, has to be, right?
Not next quarter. The next quarter will be the quarter we're in right now. And Netflix is like, we're going to have another uptick right now because more people, you know, the shelter in places started at the end of March. March was the end of the quarter. So we're going to get a big big boost out of April, probably into May. Then June might start to tail off as people come out of lockdown. It's the quarter after that. It's the July, August, September quarter that Netflix is like, we have no idea what's going to happen then.
So
now I know that stockholders always want growth, right? That's all that matters to them at all. But it seems to me if they get this big spike now, they get another little spike maybe in the next quarter, their overall base is going to stay higher, I would think. A lot of those people are going to go back to work. Maybe they're going to cut it back and stuff. But if they're getting all that growth right now, it's not like all those people just go flip that switch and they disappear again. So this is still maintained as good news, I think, for them. And they got to be feeling guilty about that as they're going, I'm really sorry we got all this growth.
Yeah, right. as they cash their checks. I do think it's less about thinking shareholders will wonder why there isn't growth. I think everybody understands, like, okay, this is a temporary effect. It's Netflix trying to set the stage of, we really don't know. Like, yes, the ideal is there's a drop off, but we end up still higher than we were before the surge. But what if the economy is in tatters and nobody can afford Netflix, whether they're sheltering at home or not? You know, that's what Netflix is holding off on, is like, we just don't know where everything is going to be in another quarter. So their guidance to shareholders is like, don't get too excited.
Yeah. But I guess also this is one of those moments where it's like, this is what it looks like to have the name of your company become a verb, you know, or become a generic noun. You know, you Kleenex, you Jell-O or whatever, like Netflix means to stay at home and binge watch stuff.
Yeah. Right.
And if you suddenly are at home and have the opportunity to binge watch stuff, you're going to go to Netflix. So it makes sense. But to Allison's point, I think you're 100% right. They're not going to lose everybody. Some number of those people are going to stick around. And it's not like suddenly go to work. You go to work and then you think like, well, finally time to unsubscribe to Netflix. I mean, that's going to stay there.
Well, and
I think
right
they're more worried about
people
who don't go back to work.
Yeah.
Sorry, Allison.
Right. But those people aren't at work now. So if they're not working now and don't have jobs, then are they the ones who are actually starting to pay more money to Netflix? I wouldn't think I would pick to do that.
Somebody who has a little bit of savings and already was subscribed to Netflix maybe, or is like, yeah, I'll subscribe to Netflix for a month. My job will be back next month. Certainly could be goosing these numbers. But then when they've gone 6 months without a job, Netflix is going to be one of the first expenses they get rid of.
I don't know about that, because even at
I'm just saying that is a thing that can happen.
Correct.
Some that's what people. Netflix is concerned about.
But like, even at that level, the idea at minimum wage of trading 1 hour of labor for an entire month of Netflix, it feels like
it depends if that comes down to a choice between that paying your rent or feeding yourself, right?
Sure, sure.
You know, that's a whole separate conversation, of course. But I think the other thing here that is interesting to look at is people underestimate how big Netflix is. It's worldwide. It's in almost every country. So as the lockdown is easing now, they're not in China, but it's easing now in South Korea. It's easing in New Zealand. They'll start to see what some sample versions of this are looking like. They'll also get to go back into production in Iceland and in South Korea as those restrictions ease. And they are present in the world in a way that even major studios aren't. I mean, major studios shoot all over the world, but they're shooting for the major audience, right? Which usually means shooting with American actors, maybe British, Canadian actors in English for the most part. Netflix can make a zombie movie in Korea with an all-Korean cast directed by Koreans, and that will be very helpful to Netflix in a way that I don't think it would be for any of the other major studios.
Tom, you got my head spinning right now, because here's a thought that I've never had before. We've watched over the last 10 years on this show as Netflix rose to prominence, rose to gather a bunch of awards, rose to credibility, rose to possible complete saturation in the market. What we're seeing them slow down as there's simply fewer and fewer lands to conquer, which means for shareholder value, the next move for them to make is to spend less and less and ride the prestige. Like, for example, if Netflix, and I don't want to give Bryce a heart attack, but if Netflix called me up on the phone right now and said, we would like to make Modern Rogue a Netflix original series. I'd say, great, how much will you pay? And they said, $0, but you will get to tell the world that you have a Netflix original series called The Modern Rogue. And it's like, well, that's less than the some dollars we get from YouTube. They're like, yes, but would you like to have a Netflix original? It would be a price cover your ears.
I want to be careful here that people don't, or unless you meant it that way, people don't think that me bringing up South Korean productions.
Oh, no. I did not mean it that way.
That's like people who don't deserve to be paid getting on Netflix.
No. Okay. What you mean is what we are mutually discussing is the idea that you can make money either by expanding the user base and the fees that come in, or by reducing the expenses. And you were talking about a typical Hollywood move to reduce cost is to go where it's more affordable to produce. I'm thinking steps ahead, down to where.
That's not what I was saying.
Oh, really?
No, but Brian's saying it.
Because your point's real good, but I was like, where did that come from out of what I said? What I was saying is that Netflix has high quality productions in multiple areas of the world. They're not doing what Hollywood does and says, well, sure, we'll shoot in Azerbaijan if you give us a discount. They're saying we shoot in every market we operate in because we have local audiences everywhere. Everyone is a local audience for us. And so we can come back online with South Korea with a high production series that we would do anyway, because it's going to be a hit in South Korea and Taiwan and Japan and a little bit in the United States and other places. And that's something Sony Pictures can't even do. That's something that Disney can't do because they don't have the presence in every market in the same way that Netflix does.
So I guess to expand on that thought, like what you do is once you've permeated everything and you've hit saturation, you figure out how to make more money. And one way to do that is I would expect to see a lot more of just dubbing everything. Because if something is a medium hit in America, you could spend some lesser amount of money and make it an even
and they've already been doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one thing, is you get everything available in every language. Then you go back again and you refine it with a little bit of machine learning, so the lips start matching what everybody says and it starts looking like it's native. Then the next thing you start doing is you start lowering the bar of quality that right now Netflix has is at the apex of prestige and saturation and power, which you got to harvest something, and they can't saturate anymore. So it seems to me this is the part where they start lowering the bar. Also, I'll be right back. I got to make a call to Netflix. I'm sorry. I had some stuff I was thinking about.
Well, while Brian's gone, I wanted to ask a question on a different angle to this. If we're talking about the new subscriber growth, are those people really the people that have to have the new original content, or are they binging the old original content? So if you know, I've been a member for a long time, I've been a member for however many years, let's say I've been there 5 years. Well, I got to have new stuff to keep paying my $11, $12 a month. But if I'm out of work and I've just never subscribed before, then, hey, look, here's a series I never saw that everybody talked about. I'll go watch that.
Here's what I suspect is driving this. And Tom, I think you're familiar with this, so you could tell me if I'm wrong. Economists refer to something called the endowment effect. They'll do a experiment where half the students in a class will be given a mug, and then the other half will not have the other half will be given some amount of money. And they said, you can spend your money to buy the mug or the t-shirt, whatever. And if you have the mug, you charge an inordinately high price to give it up, because we don't like giving something up. And whereas you offer a much lower price to buy the mug, because we're more motivated by fear than success. So my point is, I suspect that there's kind of an endowment effect happening with Netflix, because I pay my monthly fee and I perceive I have all of these shows, that I own them, that they're mine. And the idea of giving that up, even temporarily, is very hard for me to swallow. So I think that a lot of people will stick around.
Sure. To answer Allison's question, I think the answer is yes for both sides. Yes, the people who are back with Netflix and haven't been in a while can have a lot of fun going back through old episodes of Netflix shows that they're catching up on, that they missed. But nobody would be subscribing to Netflix if they had stopped making new content, right? You don't come into Netflix for the old content. You come into Netflix for the new content. You come into Netflix expecting to see, oh, I want to be in on the conversation. That's one of my big benefits is I can now talk about the new season of Ozark. I can now talk about, you know, whatever the hot new show. So yes, a lot of the people who are new to Netflix or returning after a long absence can get a lot more benefit out of the back catalog than existing subscribers can. But you still don't want to devalue that new content as far as keeping people in and making people want to be in the first place, because that new stuff has an effect.
I must just be unusual because I watch a lot of old stuff, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people do, but you're one data point.
Right, but you said you when you were talking.
Yes, you. That's the problem with English is we use the same singular and plural for the, you know, I should have said thou when I was talking to you.
We're watching Taxi and we're watching, Cheers. We finished Andy Griffith.
But you're an existing subscriber.
True.
So in other words, you are now exploring the back catalog because you have a little more latitude to do that. Which is great.
No, that's why Netflix has a back catalog. But I'm a back catalog person.
All I'm saying is that's not necessarily what is the most important in attracting or keeping a new subscriber, even if they're motivated by, I have all this extra time. They might have picked something else. They might have picked Prime Video. Yeah.
Hey man, most importantly, if you too are a back catalog person and you want to experience the entire back catalog of Cord Killers, you can support all the things that we've done for you guys for nearly 10 years in various incarnations by heading on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Just $1 an episode. That's all we're asking for. You guys get a special access to an RSS feed that's got our current show, the Spoiler in Time, all broken out, and secret access to our After Talk segment. Thank you to the 1,000 plus bosses who keep us loud, live, and independent.
Yeah, if thou art someone who's interested, sign up and you can all enjoy it.
Thousands? What?
I did.
Patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's talk about how to watch. All right, this is really the interesting one today. I mean, the Netflix one was kind of interesting, but what's going to happen to movies is something we've been talking about a lot on Cord Killers. And we kind of know at this point that whatever happens, it's going to be different. All the movies are getting moved. Here's the latest from the past week. This is important for understanding later. Spider-Man Homecoming Part 3 moving from July 2021 to November 2021. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness going from November 2021 to March 2022. Spider-Verse sequel movie going from April 2022 to October 2022. Thor Love and Thunder is actually moving the other direction, oddly, going from February 18th, 2022 to February 11th, so a week earlier. Venom Let There Be Carnage, which will be the name of the next Venom movie, will move from October 2020 to June 2021. Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights is moving from this June to next June. And Scooby-Doo going straight to digital. You'll be able to buy that one May 15th. That last is a Warner Brothers film. Maybe not a blockbuster, but interesting in the light of something that Warner Brothers is saying about movies. AT&T, which owns Warner Brothers, COO, soon to be CEO, John Stankey, told investigators Wednesday that the parent company of Warner Brothers is thinking about its theatrical model. Stankey then got a little blowback, and AT&T had to put out a press release saying, "We remain supportive of the theatrical experience and our exhibition partners." But then Warner Brothers CEO Ann Sarnoff said, "The most confidence they have are in those tentpole titles." In other words, the theory goes, and Variety laid this out really well, people are getting more used to watching movies at home. We've been talking about that. Mid-level films are already having a hard time getting by at theaters. Those non-blockbusters, they just don't bring in the dollars. And as we just mentioned, the schedule is getting crowded as movies get pushed off to later, meaning there's less room to even put in those mid-level films. See Artemis Fowl, The Lovebirds, and My Spy all skipping reschedule and not going to theaters. They're going straight to streaming services. That leaves the big money blockbusters, in Variety's theory here, as viable for theaters And that goes with what Warner Brothers seems to be saying. A couple other things to note here. LA-based ePoll Market Research surveyed what people say they will do. Now, this doesn't mean they will do it, but this is where people's heads are at. When they ask, when you're allowed to leave your house, what are you going to do? 14% said they expect to stream TV less. So that means that 86% will stream at the same amount they are now or more. And 23% say they will go to the movie theaters less. So that's a chunk of people saying, I'm not going to go back to going to the movie theaters the way I used to. Brian, this is the roadmap that people are looking at to say all this streaming, like you guys were talking about with Netflix, is going to keep people around because they'll be able to keep streaming. And then people will be nervous about going back to theaters, and there may not be as many movies in the theaters anyway. It'll all just be the big blockbusters.
So think about before there was movies. If you were going to leave the, you know, your shanty back in the 1800s or whatever.
Yeah, back when my grandpa was born.
It better be for something good. So maybe a traveling 10-in-1 circus would come through, or a road show, or a symphony, or a play or whatever. It was something good. It was an event to leave the house, right? And then along comes movies. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, the movies. Train pulls into station. That's something that's worth going, right? Then radio comes, and then television comes, and movie theaters are kind of decimated, right? Then they figured out, oh, wait, no. We have to, if people are going to come out, it better be for a good reason because they have so many other alternatives. And so there's a rebound. We see the 3D uprising, whatever, pick your poison, the quality of presentation, your Alamo draft houses or whatever. But then there's suddenly another democratization, both on the fact that anybody could produce high quality content over YouTube. But now there's the increased cost of not just your ticket price, but your exposure. So where are we? Where we were 100 years ago saying, well, if I'm going to leave the house, it better be for something good. So it makes sense that who's getting squeezed are these middle performing, low budget, maybe your rom-coms or your comedies or what have you. And only the tentpole movies are going to do. And it makes me feel like, suspect if I'm predicting, that we're only going to see bigger, more spectacle events made out of these. If somebody is going to leave the house, it better be for something good.
I don't understand why this is anything different than normal, why this is related to the virus, because, and again, maybe I am, sorry about that.
That's Hollywood calling to explain it to you.
Yes, sorry. I don't understand why this is the case right now, or why it's any different than normal, because, and again, maybe it's because we're weird and we're not part of the big U, but we only go to the theater for big things, for big blockbuster tentpole movies where it's going to be grand looking. You know, it's going to be a Star Trek or a Star Wars or a big adventure movie or something. But the other 90% of what we watch, we always wait till it comes out on streaming we can rent it in some way.
If I was going to guess, it might be from where I'm at. I've got kids, and that's an easy decision for the afternoon, is to take the kids to a movie. And there's a fairly wide spectrum of movies that we could go to, but I know that the fee is measured in dollars. But now that the fee is measured in risk and exposure to a virus or whatever, that does change the equation a little bit. What was an easy sell for me suddenly becomes a little bit more challenging.
Which might be why you see Scooby-Doo go digital for Warner. Is that certainly families aren't going to be the first ones back in the theater with all their children. Get back to Allison's point. Also, in addition, I think you are representative of the future. You're just advanced. That is where the trend was going. You know, that has been a complaint, is that all we get are blockbusters. But up until now, the reality is you could have a mid-range movie make $30 million. And I think what we're saying here is not, you know, that the trend is new, but that this trend is going to get accelerated. And so instead of going to the theater and seeing the two or three big blockbusters and six other titles, you may be only seeing the two or three blockbusters. Those other titles may just be more and more going straight to streaming.
I do think it's worth mentioning that a regression to the mean happens faster than one would expect. I mean, look at, if you need an example, look at what can happen in just a 10-year gap after two countries are at war. You know, like, I believe Germany was our friend by 1959. They were not our friend in 1949.
West Germany was.
Sure. But my point is, for anyone who says, like, no, it takes a long time to get back to business as usual, I say, no, it doesn't. I say the moment it gets usual, it becomes the new normal.
Well, it depends on what you mean by long time, too, right? If you mean like 6 months, like, okay, maybe. If you mean 10 years, well, probably not. But your point is really well taken. Like, getting back to normal is going to be there's going to be a new definition of that. And so normal will feel normal for Alliston because all those big blockbusters that you like to see are probably still going to go to theaters because people like to see them in theaters. But some of those kids movies like you're talking about, Brian, some of those romantic comedies, you just may not have the option to see those anymore because it just may not be worth putting into place. Also, theaters are going to be strapped for cash. They may not keep all of their locations open, and there will be fewer screens to fill.
What happens to date night, though? I was just thinking about that. I mean, let's go see a
movie. Date night is a great example of one of those mid-level rom-coms I'm talking. No, what do you mean?
But I mean, for me, you know, I can do either one, and it's not a big event to go out or not go out. That's not a huge deal to me. But if when you're dating, that's one of the things people do on dates, right? They go to the movies. Yeah. So,
well, I think they still will. That's going to be different. It's just their choices will be different than they were before.
We've speculated a little bit about kind of what the future of movies look like. One of the things that we talked about is the idea that just like right now you get a 2D and a 3D release of the same movie at the same time in the same metro play or mega theater, maybe you get a director's cut and a regular cut of a movie. I can see a third option of kind of a date night experience where instead of a bunch of chairs side by side, you get a bunch of kind of Las Vegas style tables set up and you get a more catered cuisine based experience.
That trend may be accelerated as well, because we've been seeing more and more of these like come out for dinner at a movie all in one place. We'll bring the drinks to you while you sit and watch the movie.
I mean, imagine if you coupled that with even and I swear this is not a way to wedge myself in the narrative, but like a live act comes out and does a 15-minute opener or whatever it is. And then the trailer starting the movie begins or what have you. Like I don't think I've yet kissed the upper limit of what I'm willing to spend for a good date night with my lady. And I think that the experience could actually grow bigger and I would pay more for it too. And especially if what we are afraid of is exposing ourselves to germs or whatever, then fine, spread everybody out, you know, like instead of 120 seats, reduce it to 60 at tables and so on.
That's another one. That is the way theaters are working in the places that are opening up already. And that is the way it's going to work, is the capacity of these theaters is going to go down, which means if they're going to get the same amount for a Marvel blockbuster, they're going to have to put it on more of their screens, which means fewer screens for other things.
What if we take these two ideas that you guys had and put them together? You talked about tables. What if they're booths with walls where you're not breathing the air of the people directly next to you?
Everybody
else is here.
Yeah.
Right. Like booth with the table, and you're watching the movie and Brian comes out and does some magic and lights something on fire. And
I
then
swear I was not
starts.
Trying to angle for that. I had a nightmare last night that I had live shows again.
Yeah. I don't know. But it seems clear. It doesn't seem like any of us are disagreeing that the selection of movies in theaters is going to be reduced, and that we're going to see more of these kinds of movies that used to go to the theaters going into Peacock, HBO Max, Disney Plus, etc.
I think another thing that will happen is basically we're seeing the contrast turned up, just like we saw the contrast between YouTube and television get turned up, where it's like, oh, you're on TV, oh no, you're on YouTube. But as when YouTube first started, it was kind of a garbage dumpster fire, and if you said I'm a star on YouTube, that was code for I took a video of a cat once. But then there was a flight to quality, so they're kind of became YouTube was its own vertical that you knew had good stuff and less good stuff. Television has good stuff and less good stuff. And movies, I think that a lot of the content that is being moved to Netflix is becoming its own vertical where there's good stuff and not good stuff. But the low end of movies is kind of being chopped off and being funneled over to over-the-top networks.
Now, the voice I hear screaming out in the wilderness right now is, what about my independent theater? What will anyone do for it? And I say, you will continue to go and pay $3 for a hot dog at your independent theater, and maybe they'll be fine. Also, IFC Films is putting in place a program that will let indie theaters screen library titles from the IFC library for no rental fee when the theaters reopen. You always hear theaters make their money off concessions, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that they pay a high rental fee, especially for these blockbusters, that they make back the rental fee in the ticket sales, but they don't make the profit until you buy something else. Well, IFC Films, this is not the IFC channel, this is IFC Films, is going to waive that rental fee for films to be made available starting May 29th. So these are like high quality, you know, film festival style films. Boyhood by Richard Linklater, Y Tu Mama También by Alfonso Cuarón, that kind of stuff.
Do they make no money or because it's on the back catalog or
Who makes no money?
The studios who are loaning these to independent...
IFC Films is going to not charge a rental fee. I assume there's probably some other deal to take a cut of ticket sales or something like that, but that's not the way it usually goes. Yeah, usually you just put the rental fee out there and you take a cut of ticket sales on top of it.
Well, it makes me wonder if we're not going to start to see people offering like, hey, you keep 100% of the ticket sales up to 20% of the theater filled. We'll only take a cut after that. And all of a sudden it becomes a no risk proposition for the
getting rid of that rental fee is the biggest favor you can do to these small theaters right there. And I think that's why they're leading with that.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, folks, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like here to stay. It's all about location.
Wednesday, April 30th at 8:30 p.m., NBC is showing a Parks and Rec reunion episode with Woo-hoo! The characters from Parks and Rec dealing with quarantine life. By all accounts, Amy Poehler, Rashida Jones, Aziz Ansari, Nick Offerman, Aubrey Plaza, Chris Pratt, Adam Scott, Rob Lowe, Jim O'Hare, and Retta are all on board. Man, the people from Parks and Rec are famous. The half-hour special will help raise money for Feeding America's COVID-19 Response Fund.
Doggone it. That means I have to watch like two more seasons in the next 3 days. I intentionally, I saw the footage of this and I was like, don't tell the kids. Because I knew that all they'd want to do is watch more Parks and Rec, which I'm trying to save because
I
love
gosh.
It.
Could not be more excited about this. That is fantastic. So the thing is, you know, it's not like one of them is unavailable and is filming a movie or something. Right.
Yeah.
This is a great time to do it.
I think about somebody like Chris Pratt, right? He commands top dollar these days. He would have to want to do this, right? And direct his agent, like, come to an agreement, figure it out. I want to do this because otherwise they shouldn't be able to afford him.
Yeah. You know, I heard.
Well, but they're not paying for him, right?
I don't know. I don't know if they're being paid. Charity. I mean, they're raising money for charity. That doesn't mean they're not paying the performers.
Okay. Yeah.
Raising money for charity means they're trying to get you to donate while you're watching. Doesn't mean they gave the salary of the person to charity. I don't know. Maybe they're all doing it for free. I don't know.
I choose to believe.
So, Allison, I'm going to try to say this in code so I don't spoil Brian, but the final season takes place in a way that makes me wonder what effect that will have on this that is happening now in 2020.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see how they handle that. By the way, Brian, you don't have to watch it on Wednesday, because it's going to be streaming the day after. So if you can keep your kids from finding out about it.
Yeah. Right on.
A couple Star Wars notes here. A lot happening on May 4th on Disney Plus. The finale of Star Wars Clone Wars premieres that day. Disney has announced it's releasing Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker to Disney Plus 2 months early, so you'll be able to get that on Disney Plus May 4th. There will also be an 8-episode behind-the-scenes look at The Mandalorian arriving on May 4th, all on Disney Plus May 4th. Also, Deadline says Russian Doll co-creator Leslie Headland will write and run a Star Wars series for Disney Plus set in an alternate timeline.
Ooh, I don't know how I feel about those words, alternate timeline. I mean, equal parts. I'm
the Russian Doll showrunner doing a show for Star Wars. Cool. That was a great show. And, you know, I'm all for getting interesting creative people to do takes on Star Wars. Alternate timeline.
Do you think that's code? For what's funny is I was thinking of a new Splinter, but what if that's code for in the Star Wars expanded universe, what they now refer to as Legends. What if we get to
they
go
have
visit
an alternate timeline they have that it. They could use.
They had an original timeline, and in fact, I say all the movies are the alternate timeline, and what was in all the books is the real timeline. What if so that is the quote-unquote alternate timeline they're talking about?
Episodes 1 through 6 are in the prime timeline.
That's right. And then there's
and
a
then
splinter.
Split out with The Force Awakens into an alternate timeline.
And there's good stuff in there. If you've ever read Tales from the Cantina, Tales from Mos Eisley, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, you've got some top-notch, top-tier sci-fi writers who came up with some cool backstory on everything. And of course, you know, I don't know, wouldn't it be fine if we followed a certain Grand Admiral who made his way up the Imperial ranks?
Instead of throwing him into Rebels?
Okay, all right. like
well, now,
what
remember,
if that was
though, you're thinking too small. Leslie Headland can really mess with time, right? From Russian Doll.
Yeah.
It could be completely off the hook, right?
Every episode could be crazy. A new timeline.
Exactly. It could be running backwards. You don't even know.
I love the idea of them like playing with Palpatine is an elected chancellor. And then what happens? Like, and doing a multiple takes on stuff.
Well,
over and over again. So this is wild because my initial reaction was my gut twisted and I'm like, ugh. But then the more I think about it, the more excited I am. It's like, who's to say which will become the more popular? Like, call it whatever you want. But a redo going back to episode 6 probably sounds pretty good.
This is like Marvel What If, right?
Well, we could never do that unless. Imagine a What If that gets, you know, 3 episodes into a thing and people are loving it. So it goes 9 episodes, then it goes 12 episodes, and then it goes so long that people are like, oh my God, you're telling me that there was anything other than this thing? This is the best thing ever. I mean, they have that opportunity.
Apple TV Plus is premiering mini episodes of Fraggle Rock called Fraggle Rock Rock On each Tuesday. Apple says Fraggle Rock Rock On is shot entirely on iPhones, iPhone 11s to be particular, from the homes of the production team and individual artists from all over the United States.
I'll bet that'll be fine because most of the magic happens in the smoothing.
They're
the
out
edit
there. You can,
the production.
You can take a look at it right now.
Yeah. Well, if only I had Apple
That's
TV.
Cool.
We'll talk about that.
Oh,
do you like?
Actually, you don't have to have an Apple TV, right? Can't you get it on Samsung TVs now?
Well, he means Apple TV Plus, whole different situation. Oh. Brian had some frustrations in signing up for Apple TV Plus
we'll
this weekend.
We'll discuss this later.
Yeah. Look at that look on his face.
but setting Brian's problem aside for the moment, Allison, what do you think of this idea of an entire, I mean, it's green screen and puppets, so it lends itself to this, but all shot on iPhone 11.
I love the idea. I mean, the cameras on those things are pretty amazing. I don't understand why you couldn't do that. I mean, that would be perfectly reasonable. My understanding is that all these people are not together as well. Is that right? They're separately in their homes, and that's pretty impressive. And that's one of those things that we're excited about looking at. How could things be done in the future? Does everybody have to fly everywhere to do things? Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
I wish I had watched the show.
Because you have a green screen, you can do some easier compositing. Maybe one person does 2 puppets while the voices are coming from elsewhere, of course. And YouTube's going to host a 10-day digital film festival May 29th through June 7th. With 20 festival partners. That includes Cannes Film Festival, Toronto International Film Festival, Sundance, Berlin, Tribeca, Venice. Basically, all the big film festivals are going to come together to replace this year's canceled film festivals with one huge one on YouTube for 10 days, starting May 29th. It'll be available at youtube.com/weareone for free and will raise money for health-related charities.
So one of the things that seems completely baked into the DNA of YouTube is thou shalt reveal your exact view count, or at least what you, with a straight face, say is your view count. but one of the things with the whole festival circuit is you don't focus on how many people watched your thing. You focus on, you know, what the I don't know, the prestige that comes.
The reaction.
Exactly. And you get the pull quotes and whatever. Do we think they hide the view count for that? I guess they show it's got to be YouTube. It's baked into the DNA.
I mean, they could hide the view count for this. If the festival said the only way we do this is hide the view count, then they probably would.
Yeah, because there's a lot of very prestigious movies that ultimately, per YouTube's numbers, would, you know, I don't know, have, you know, 20,000.
Put it this way, I don't think that's going to be a big issue here. I don't know.
For the YouTube experience, I would think it is.
I think if there were YouTubers involved, it would be, but there aren't any.
Depending on where it is in the YouTube system, for example, if this is part of, say, the purchase or rental system, those don't have view counts, and it's still the YouTube player.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
This will be free. You won't have to pay for it, but it could be in that system.
And if it's a live stream, it's not a live stream, is it? Well, I guess we don't know.
They're films. They're films that have been recorded. They're not done live.
But if it's played scheduled.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, would they only show it once and everybody has to tune in? No, I think it's on demand.
Oh, okay.
That's my impression.
That was going to be my question. How are they timing all of this? Is it going to be running 24/7 in circles
I think there may be limited availability. In other words, you might not have all films up for the all 10 days.
Yeah, I think in the chat, okay. Dan Wally has it. You just won't see it as though it's a rented movie on YouTube. It'll just be there.
I guess we'll find out.
Sure. YouTube is also going to launch 11 original shows streaming for free over the next 2 months, including a dance special called Move With Me with dancer producer Matt Stefanina.
My co-star.
And a show called... what? That's right.
Matt Stefanina and I were both on Dance Showdown together. And oh my God, I'm so happy for him. That's amazing.
There's also a show called Create Together With Me, hosted by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, a bunch of others. These are going to roll out slowly. Not all of them are coming right away. But this is something that was planned before the virus to be like, yes, we're going to put our originals out for free.
Yeah. Matt Stefanina is a good guy and everybody should watch it, including me, even though I'm not really a dance show watching kind of guy or a dance show being on kind of guy.
A few more notes. The 39 South by Southwest Film Festival films are now streaming on Amazon Prime. That'll last until May 6th. You can go watch those. All three seasons of Avatar: The Last Airbender are on Netflix.
Yay!
In the United States as of May 15th. So they're not there yet, but they're going to be. And HBO has said it will make a fourth season of Westworld, which will continue to be run by Lisa Joy and Christopher Nolan.
Right on, man. I can't wait to make yet another lap through Avatar: The Last Airbender.
All right, let's talk about what we've had our eyes on. Allison, what is something that you have been watching lately?
Well, I'm going to sound, again, like I just watch old stuff. I never watch new stuff. But we were really excited when Terminator Dark Fate came out. And basically, everybody told us, no, it's stupid. You shouldn't see it. It's terrible. It's not a good movie. We're looking at IMDb right now. It says 6.3 stars out of 10. I believe Rotten Tomatoes, where Tom's wife works, gave it a 70. And so, you know, we kind of stayed away from it. And finally, it came up for like $2.99 on iTunes on Friday night. And we decided, you know what? We want to like it. Let's try it. I loved it. I thought it was delightful. I mean, I enjoyed the action. I enjoyed the absurdity of it. It had all the things that you would hope to have done slightly differently enough to catch you unawares if nothing's been spoiled for you. I'm definitely not going to do any spoil here, but there's a line that Sarah Connor says where she says what you're always yelling at the screen during an action adventure movie. And it's hilarious when she says it. It's just a great, great line. Plus, after having seen Arnold again, it was fun to go back and rewatch him with Lulu and Whiskey, his donkey and pony, where he's explaining why you should go off on quarantine. I went back and watched again, which I think we should watch like every other week just to stay sane.
What was there anything in particular that led you to pulling the trigger on that now? Or was it just like, you know, we've been talking about this. Let's finally do it.
It just came up, you know, iTunes always has these things where they say new top movies. And we watched a movie recently and it turned out it was from like 1992. I remember Betty White was in it and I looked up how old she is. She's 98. And I'm like, man, she looks amazing. The movie is really old, but it was on top movies, so, you know.
All right, Brian, what about you?
Man, I'm watching old stuff. I think I might have mentioned last week. Did I tell you I was watching Lonesome Dove, getting the kids into it, and that it holds up? Did we talk about this?
I can't remember if you did or not,
There's a couple of effects that in a pre-CGI era, you know, just don't age well, like cartoon-looking lightning and dust storms and whatnot. But for every one of those, there's five amazing shots of, like, you got all those actors to ride those horses at that sunset on location somewhere. You got a cinematographer to stand there, stare down that stampede of cows coming right at you. It's really amazing and really, really holds up. If you've never seen it, late 80s classic Lonesome Dove miniseries. I think it's on Stars, on which I get on Amazon Prime.
And I want to throw out Star Wars Clone Wars. The final season has been on Disney Plus now. The first three episodes didn't love, were okay. The middle three episodes were very slow to get through, but did set up a couple of important things for the final episodes, which are essentially a feature length movie explaining what's going on during Revenge of the Sith outside of what's going on during Revenge of the Sith, and are amazing. If you liked Clone Wars, you'll love these last few episodes, and you'll probably be okay with those earlier episodes. But these last were two of the last four in the last little sequence of the story, and it's amazing. It's really, really, really fun to watch. So, you know, if you're not into Clone Wars, this is not going to change your mind. But if you are, and you hadn't got in on this yet, I absolutely recommend it.
Right on.
Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, I got a little bit of news you can use here on the lookout. I think we reported on this maybe a week or so back, but HBO has made a bunch of their shows available for streaming free via HBO Now, Amazon Prime Video, Hulu, and some other places. Gave me the perfect chance to start watching one of the most iconic TV series of all time, The Sopranos. If you don't know, like I didn't, I knew kind of what it was about. It's about Tony Soprano and his two families, you know, his wife and kids, and the New Jersey mob that he oversees and is working his way up the ranks. And it's a lot about how a modern for 1990s man navigates the world of organized crime, right? You know, the society where men are in touch with their feelings, but he also still has to go out and kill people. You know, he goes to therapy and he's taking medication, but he still has to do business in this very masculine and dangerous field. It holds up really well. You know, the cinematography is great. The performances are fantastic. You know, if you haven't, give The Sopranos a shot. It's not too late to jump in. There are six seasons of The Sopranos streaming now on HBO, and they are for free for a limited time on Amazon Prime Video, Hulu, Apple TV, I think Roku as well. Very limited time. I think this might actually be the final week that they're doing this. So now's a chance to get started. And if you like what you see afterwards, check out HBO. If you've got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com.
So Brian and I do other things that we like to tell you about from time to time. One of the things I do is write books. There's an audiobook and ebook available of my new novel, Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R, about a time traveler and his time ship, Verity, looking for pie, coffee, and a way to save the universe. If you're looking for a way to spend some time and enjoy its story, I highly recommend you check out Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R, at tomsnewbook.com.
I was excited to hear that it's okay to read the books out of order. Your books out of order, Trigger, and what's the previous book called?
Pilot X.
And the reason I'm glad is because I've read Pilot X, but I can't ever remember things I've read. So I'm figuring when I read Trigger, it's going to be all new to me. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, yeah. It'll remind you of the things that might be important. And if you haven't read Pilot X, it's just telling you those things that are important. But yeah, they're meant to be read in whatever order you want because time travel. And Brian, finally, we have a taker.
I hope he's not the only one. We'll find out. But man, I love this, and I want more people to do this. As you guys know, our friends over at Doghouse Systems provided all the hardware that runs this studio, and Harrison dropped us an email saying, I bought a doghouse, and he sent me a picture of it. I loved it. So if you bought a doghouse system, just head on over to doghouse.com/v/rogue.
Doghousesystems.com.
Ooh, yeah, that could be scary. Doghousesystems.com/v/rogue, and use promo code ROGUE at checkout. Send us a picture of the system you get, and man, you'll just be our new bestest friend in the world.
All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Streaming service HBO Max set a launch date. They said they'd launch in May, and they're pushing it right up towards the end. May 27th, we will get HBO Max, including its 10,000 hours of library programming from across Warner Media's catalog and new and original series, all for $15 a month. And if you're like, wait a minute, doesn't HBO alone already cost $15 a month? You're right. And HBO is trying to make it easy. If you pay directly for HBO now, you will get HBO Max. If you subscribe to HBO through DirecTV, AT&T, or UVerse, or AT&T TV Now, all the AT&T stuff, you'll automatically get access to HBO Max. The people who are billing through third parties are the ones who are going to have to think about this. So far, Charter, YouTube TV, and just today, Apple have announced that they are cooperating with HBO Max. And so if you subscribe to HBO Now through Charter, YouTube TV, and Apple, you will also automatically get access to HBO Max. However, if you subscribe to HBO through something I haven't mentioned yet, you will have to cancel that and then sign up for HBO Max separately.
Man, I'll tell you what, given the situation that we're in right now, and even more importantly, given that we might be on our way out of it, an aggressive a play as possible is what HBO should be going for in Warner Media. And I think behind the scenes, there's a lot of scrambling happening. Hey, here's a fact. Go ahead.
Can I give you a hot tip, though, on the reason I subscribe to HBO through Apple is because you can get gift cards at Costco and other places like that through eBay for up to 20% off sometimes. So like $80 for a $100 gift card, easily 15%. You can find those all the time. If you apply those to your account and then you rent services like HBO, you just got 15% off of those fees.
Good tip.
Hot tip.
Hey, Tom, streaming is up. That's not a surprise. Also, streaming is down. That's the surprise. Both are true. Nielsen estimates U.S. viewers streamed 154.6 billion minutes of video for the week ending April 13th, the lowest level in a month, but almost twice as much as the same time a year ago. Ozark was the top title for subscription video on demand. A couple of other factoids. Chicago saw the largest rise in streaming, going from 12th to 5th in the U.S. While evening is still getting the most viewing, the hours between 1 and 4 p.m. all saw 50% rises in viewing. I wonder
2 p.m.,
why.
The new prime time.
Yeah, exactly.
Research firm Muso has calculated that visits to film piracy sites also is on the rise by around 40% across the UK, Canada, and the United States in March. You saw bigger rises in other countries. Italy and Spain saw rises of 66% and 50% respectively. It's up 60%, I think, in India. Muso CEO Andy Chatterley, however, pointed out, and this is the company doing the research, piracy or unlicensed consumption trends are closely linked to paid for and licensed content. So just as Netflix has seen large subscriber games, we have seen a significant spike in visits to film piracy sites as well.
Yeah. So I guess basically it just acts as, like anything else, a proxy to gauge how much free time Americans have.
That's one of those things where
everybody has, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is one of those things where I like to point out, you're going to see the headline, piracy skyrockets during lockdown. And the effect is like, yes, also legitimate viewing skyrockets during lockdown. So may not be quite as titillating as the headline and make it sound.
Amazon is giving its users of Fire TV and Fire tablet devices a free year subscription to the Food Network Kitchen. The service from Discovery provides 2,300 on-demand cooking classes from celebrity chefs and Food Network hosts. The service normally costs $4.99 a month.
Yeah, that's nice. And apparently this one was in the works before the lockdown as well. It just happened to time out this way when everyone's baking bread.
All right, it's time for Brian to dance.
Yes, Brian, pull out your tap shoes.
Dance Quibi. For my supper.
Quibi got another million downloads in its second week, bringing the total to 2.7 million. Quibi also said it will add the ability to cast video to televisions sometime next month, with no details about how that would work, especially given the turnstile thing where you can turn your mobile device different directions to see portrait or landscape of the same video. Brian asked me, to, you know, no matter what he said, to limit what he says about Quibi in response. So here goes. The timer's on.
You know what? We got an email that we'll not read all of, but Jim H. wrote us saying like, hey man, that whole like twisting the different aspect ratio things, maybe they could get a whole bunch of old 4x3 shows and they'd be fun to watch. I'm sure they would, but he went on to list like 15 different shows, none of which Quibi has the rights to. That's the whole point, is they were trying to license a bunch of originals. And while I agree with you that novel Quibi watching format would work very well, I don't think there's any saving what Quibi actually has. I don't think that's all right. Time's up.
Wait. There was a TV we saw at CES that it was like a 55-inch TV that rotated landscape to portrait and back.
Oh, right. That was a Samsung one.
You could watch Quibi
one,
on that.
Yeah, it's perfect.
I don't think Quibi it was, Samsung, but maybe they had one too.
Film and TV shoots have restarted in Sweden and Denmark under new rules that limit the number of people on set, distance rules between workers, and no crowd scenes. Australia's long-running soap Neighbours will go back into production, and they added precautions of temperature checks and physical contact between actors will be applied.
No physical contact between actors in Australia. That's important.
Sorry.
The Neighbours shoot will not allow the actors to be next to each other.
Not even close?
No physical contact between actors.
Okay. Camera angles will be used to show people closer together than they are, and pre-production work and scripts have begun for season 3 of The Mandalorian. Season 2 is coming in October. Meryl Barr was talking to me about this, about the idea how some Hollywood institutions are actually going full on like summer camp. They're like, they're all moving in. They're all going to work together. They're all going to get tested on their way in. They're all going to get tested on their way out. And it's going to be just a 6-week experience where you're outside of the rest of the world for a little bit.
I like the idea of changing camera angles to make it look like you're close together, except one person's going to be way smaller than the other person. So you do like a Gandalf thing or something.
Standing on their head. Yeah.
I just want to see green screen kisses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Neighbours is a soap opera. How are you not going to have a love scene in a soap opera? Come on. Like, you could work the virus in to a certain extent to explain some of it, but I'm very curious how that is all expected to work.
You just do fade to blacks, but it's for even hugs.
Can you have someone like standing farther back and then someone here, and then you make it look like they're kissing? Just have them lean in. Yeah. All right. Let's get to the dispatches from the front. Ander wrote in and said, Tom, Brian, and Bryce, I wanted to say a quick thank you for continuing to put out content right now. I know lots of people are reporting a decrease in podcast listeners during this time, but I'm definitely not one of them. I still get to go to work every day and have really appreciated hearing the upbeat conversations that don't forecast doom. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you, Ander.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if it makes you feel better, Ander, we don't really pay attention to the day-to-day numbers on the podcast so much as the patron numbers. We obviously are very focused on that. So if you're on the edge, you could support us at patreon.com/cordkillers. But we also pay attention to the number of people who show up live. And I got to tell you, it's been a delight to see like our numbers, you know, double as far as the live viewership at twitch.tv/nightattack. Thank you to everybody who's showing up. And we got an email from Toby that says he uses the TV Time app to track all of his shows, uses Just Watch to find them as well per our recommendation. But he's in a beta test for something called Real Good, which he said a bunch of good things about. Is it? And then I was surprised I saw that you were familiar with it, Tom.
Yeah, this app's been around since 2015. So
still in beta.
Yeah, and it's still in beta. And I'm sure they've improved it a lot. I haven't used it in a while. But none of these have ever really been as good as the promise. They do what they say, which is we'll take all the services you have and tell you what you've been watching and track it for you. But there are glitches and there's some bugs. And also you have to launch it. It's not there on your home screen. You have to remember to go into it. And that was kind of my big stumbling block was, you know, I wanted to just turn on the TV, see the interface, which is what you can do with Apple TV. And actually, Roku has some better controls for that now, too. And Real Good was just something I kept forgetting to go launch it to have it track.
I asked the last time I was on about how you guys track TV. And finally, Steve and I have solved the problem. we created an Airtable database. Now we're both engineers, so you got to take that into account. But we're able to see what we're watching, what season we're on. We can run separate reports so you can see what he can see, just what he's watching. Like he's sitting there going, "Hey, am I allowed to watch this without her? Because she's upstairs." And it works perfect for a couple of little nerds.
Before we wrap up, Tom, somebody in the chat begged me to not leave an untied up thread about my frustration with Apple TV Plus. Suffice to say, I tried to enjoy, whether it's my entitled free year of it or an entitled 7 days of it. Either way, I somehow ended up paying for it and not able to watch it on my PC. We'll talk about it in After Talk. Just know that they're in the naughty list with Brian. It was a very un-Apple Plus experience for me.
And if you're looking for that free year, there's limits to that. You can only get it 3 months after you buy something.
Sure, but I definitely was entitled to the 7 days free.
Sure.
You're
right. After Talk.
After Talk.
Our website is not ready to talk about yet because we haven't thanked Allison Sheridan for being with us. Allison, thank you so much. It was great having you back on the show. Tell folks about all the wonderful things you're doing over there at podfeet.com.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a really good time. Yeah, I do Technology Geek podcasts with an ever so slight Apple bias at podfeet.com. Learn to program, learn to tame the terminal, have chit chats. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And every other week with Bart, you keep us all safe with security bits.
Yep. Security bits.
Go check it out, podfeet.com. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll see you again next time.
Hey, Tom Merritt.
Yes, Brian Brushwood.
Know who I love even more than my own children?
Your other children?
No, not my wife. I know what you're saying. I love our $5 patrons. These are the people that keep us loud, live, and independent. Thank you so much, $5 patrons.
You know what? I love them more than not life itself, because then I'd be dead and I couldn't appreciate them, but really, really, really close. And I'm so thankful that they are here to make this show happen.
Thank you so much to all of our $5 a month patrons. You guys are wizards. You're champions.
Thank you, everyone.
You're heroes.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.